Tonight on Arena, actor Tony O'Rourke on her role in the upcoming RTE drama The Boy That Never Was, and new albums from Nick Cave, Laurie Anderson and Daughter of a Drum up for review. #51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. After consecutive, we're starting tonight with opera. Should have told you that, by the way. After consecutive sold-out productions of La Traviata in 2022 and Tosca in 2023, Northern Ireland Opera returns to the Grand Opera House in Belfast this September with Tchaikovsky's opera Yevgeny in Onegin, or Eugene Onegin, if you want to give him his Irish pronunciation. All four of the female principal performers are Irish and will be supported by the Northern Ireland Opera Chorus. And for the first time, the operatic company has put together their own orchestra conducted by Dominic Lindberg. Delighted to be joined on the line this evening by Dominic and indeed soprano Mary McCabe, who makes her operatic principal main stage debut in the role of Tatiana. Lovely to have you with us, Mary. She is quite the character and this is quite the opera. How do you describe her?
Oh, I really relate to her because she's a country girl and she wears her heart on the sleeve and she just falls in love with Onegin at first sight. So she's such a passionate character and wonderful to get into. She has quite an arc as well. So by the end of the opera, she really matures into this elegant woman and has such a strength, and she's able to face up to Onegin at the end. So it's very exciting for me to play.
Yeah, because as you say, it is quite an arc from this. She's quite a naive character, really, in the early part of the opera, you know, as she falls in love with this, I don't know if you could call him a cad, but he's not too bothered with her, really, is he?
No, he's not. He finds her, naive and doesn't take her seriously. She's basically crushing very hard on him. And he just completely dismisses her. So it's unrequited love to begin with. And then the tables turn by the end of the opera. So
yeah, they certainly do turn. And she gets her moment of strength with that turning of the tables. But let's maybe talk a little bit about what it is that she has to sing, the nature of that Tchaikovsky music. And in particular, after she meets Onegin, as you say, she takes a total crush. It's love at first sight. And she writes the letter to him. In some ways, you could say that's quite a lot of agency for, if you think of the period of time, for a young woman to take into her hand and write a letter to this man to express her love and her desire to be married.
Absolutely. It's such a bold move and takes a lot of courage. And when she asks her nanny to send it to Onegin, she's so scared to ask this because I suppose it wasn't really done. So, she's very courageous.
Yeah, and I suppose within that we get a hint of just the nature of the character that she will grow into by the end of the opera, as you say. I'm going to play a little bit of what is referred to as the letter scene and the aria therein in a version from the Mariinsky Orchestra conducted by Valery Gergiev with Anna Netrebko in the role of Tatiana here. Maybe you'd give us a sense, Mary, of what it is Tatiana is singing about in this aria and explaining. She's telling us basically the contents of the letter, isn't she?
Absolutely. She's just pouring her heart out to him, saying how much she's in love with him and that she feels like he has been sent from God to her to save her from this loneliness and this place in the countryside where she feels so misunderstood.
Well, let's have a listen to the beautiful Tchaikovsky music that expresses that sentiment. Thank you. And there off she goes with a little bit more speed than the lyricism that we get in the early part of that opera. That is the letter scene, the so-called letter scene from Tchaikovsky's Eugene Onegin, and it was the voice of Anna Netrebko that we heard there. But it is Mary McCabe who will be singing that role in the Northern Ireland opera production of Yevgeny Onegin, which takes place at the Belfast Opera, Grand Opera House. And also joining us is the man who will be conducting the orchestra and indeed the singers, obviously, on the night, Dominic Lindbergh. And Dominic, if Mary telling us about the kind of naive youth that that Tatiana is at the beginning of the Tchaikovsky opera, you were but a callow youth yourself when you first heard this opera. When, where, and how big an impact did it have on you?
Yes, I was indeed quite young. I was in my teens, and I think it was a good age to hear this opera for the first time, especially if I was a pianist already studying, so I was a big lover of classical music. So it had a huge impact on me. I was just stunned. It's just so beautiful, the music, and it doesn't stop. There are no numbers that give you a rest of beauty. It just pushes through till the very end, and yeah, it just left me stunned.
And it is one of the aspects that we really hear in that aria is the lyricism of Tchaikovsky. If he knew how to do something, he certainly knew how to write a melody, didn't he?
Oh, incredible. And it just doesn't stop. It's almost endless. The fountain of creativity to write beautiful melodies. But he can also contrast it a lot. This is what I like. It's not all just lyricism. There's a lot of dance. I mean, Tchaikovsky is very well known for all his dance music with all the ballets he wrote. So he incorporates this in his operas as well, of course. But there's also a lot of drama. It's very intense and it gets quite dark as well. And this contrast, it helps the lyrical passages even more because they shine out.
Yeah, and it did strike me, in fact, that the aspect of dance that is very present. And I suppose coming back to you on that particular aspect of things, Mary, it is at a big ball that she ultimately gets the put down from Onegin. Like, he really just treats her appallingly. Is there a lot involved in terms of the characterization here? Opera singers, particularly, I think, in more recent times, a lot is asked of them in terms of, yes, of course, you have to have the voice, but there's a lot more involved and expected nowadays, I think.
Absolutely. You have to be able to act and really portray the character and get into the depths of that character, the different nuances and motivations behind what they do, and know how to show that without being too melodramatic and just having a communication with the audience.
Yeah, I wondered about that. You've been, again, referring back to that aria. It's such I think Dominic referred to it there as a fountain. It really has this sense of a free flow. It's almost as if she's thinking out loud through those wonderful long lyrical lines.
Absolutely, and there's so many contrasting sections to it, and that's what Dominic's been helping me really bring out, is the difference of when she's really more talking to Onegin through, well, she's composing the letter, and then there's these other sections where she's just really outpouring her soul, and then it becomes much more lyrical. So it's wonderful exploring that with Dominic, just getting all those different colours.
The other aspect, Dominic, that strikes me about the music in Onegin, there are times when it has, particularly in the big choral sections, there are times when it has the feeling of Russian folk music off it, and there are times when it has similarly a feeling of perhaps religious music. I don't know if it's Russian Orthodox, but certainly a kind of spiritual music from that part of the world.
Yes, completely. Completely. I think Tchaikovsky, using this foundation of Pushkin as this great, great Russian novel, I think he really tried to put in as much of the Russian culture as he could, using these elements, the religious elements, but also having peasant dances, having the balls of the Russian society. He really tried to build a kaleidoscope of the culture of that time.
Yeah, and in fact, I know that one of your favourite sections of the opera is again from Act One, and this is the choir singing the peasant's dance. Maybe give us a sense of, and presumably having to do a bit of dancing while they're singing here as well. Give us a sense of what's involved in this piece.
Yes, you can be sure there will be a lot of dancing on stage. The chorus is not just standing around. It will be very exciting. Now, what I love so much about this is that after this quartet of the four ladies, there's just this one tenor voice from afar singing a melody all by himself. And then the chorus responds in a cappella, so without orchestra, and sings this incredibly beautiful response that's just so religious and so wonderful. And the orchestra then comes in and gives this marching character, this moving on, and this whole section then gets contrasted very abruptly with this very, very lively peasant dance, very rustic and very, it reminds me a bit of Petrushka of Stravinsky, and has this very rustic Russian sound. And I just love the contrast of these two.
Well, we're going to listen to a recording that features the chorus of the Bolshoi Theatre Orchestra and the Bolshoi Theatre. And Vasily Nabolson is here. I presume he's the tenor. Is it Lenski who's the kind of the brother-in-law, if we can put it that way, of the Tatiana character? Is it Lenski that's involved in, is the tenor that's singing here?
No, it's actually just a principal from the chorus. Ah. It's just one of the peasants leading on the chorus. Yes.
Right. Well, let's have a listen to that. A sense there of that chorus from Yevgeny Onegin, conductor Dominic Lindberg, and soprano Miriam McCabe with me on the programme this evening. Extraordinary stuff, as you said, Dominic, and it really has that religious feel to it, but it heads off into other directions there as well. Finally, Mary, from Downpatrick in County Down, the Olympic County, we might call it, at the moment. How nice is it for you, or how touching is it, or whatever? What is the set of emotions to be performing this in Belfast, to get this principal role, which I believe is the debut principal role for you in, you know, essentially almost your home city of Belfast?
Absolutely. It means the world to me. It's something I have been looking forward to all my life, quite literally. And to have this moment finally come, it's unbelievable. I'm so excited. And of course, I've got my apprehensions and I'm a bit nervous, but I really am determined to enjoy this moment and really, really take it for what it is. It's really amazing for me.
Yeah, look, if you didn't have the nerves, I'd be more worried about you. A little bit of nerves are absolutely essential. Best of luck with it, Mary, to you and all the cast, and to you as well, Dominic, Dominic Lindberg and Mary McCabe. They're Dominic, the conductor, Mary, the soprano, playing the part of Tatiana in Yevgeny Onegin, which is at the Grand Opera House in Belfast this September. And you'll get full information on niopera.com. The Boy That Never Was is a four-part drama series starting this weekend on RTÉ One Television. We meet a couple, Harry and Robin, and their three-year-old living in a somewhat idyllic life, it has to be said, in Morocco, just before tragedy hits in the form of an earthquake that leaves three-year-old Dylan missing, presumed dead. 3 years later, Harry becomes obsessed that a boy he has spotted in a Dublin train station is his Dylan. What happens from there threatens to tear apart their marriage and their lives. The couple are played by Colin Morgan as Harry and Tony O'Rourke, who plays the character of Robin. And delighted that Tony is with me in studio this evening. I was saying to you just as we were coming to air, Tony, she really is a delicious character. But when we meet her first, she has the perfect life in beautiful Morocco.
Yes, she really does. I mean, delicious is the word. You're so right, Sean, because just as a character from that space, she's so nuanced and layered and is just intelligent and so creative. There is this beautiful life that they have in Morocco. Mm. They are struggling. She is waitressing. They're trying to get by. They're struggling artists, but there's such love there. Yeah. They have this amazing family unit.
And her brother is there with them as well.
That's Ollie,
although
played
I wonder
by
sometimes
Care.
Was three a crowd. Two's company, three's a crowd.
Yes.
You know. He's around a lot.
He's around a lot. It's very hard to get rid of our Ollie, but he's great.
Played by Kara Logan, of course.
Kara Logan, brilliant Care. And they very quickly were like, this sibling relationship really works, doesn't it? We were like, because we were just messing the whole time. But no, it was really lovely. They have this amazing life with their beautiful boy, Dylan, and Tim Fleming, our incredible DOP, really captured the vibrant life of Essaouira, and that's where we shot.
I was wondering what part of Morocco were you in for the shoot? How long did you spend there, and how lucky were you to be there?
Yeah, so lucky. I mean, 8 weeks. So we began in Casablanca, and then we moved on to Essaouira, and it was so special.
Essaouira is right on the coast, isn't
exactly.
It?
Yeah, so we hit the beach right there, which was waking up to that. And the people of Morocco are so special. They're so kind and so generous, and they were just with us the whole time. They were so excited by it, and our crew were incredible over there. And then we came back here and we shot for about 6 weeks, I think, was our 8 weeks here, and we had our amazing Dublin crew as well.
So there was, it's kind of half and half, because I've only seen the first episode, and obviously it opens in Morocco and we see the earthquake moment, but as the episode progresses, we keep flashing back to Morocco. Does that flashback continue then throughout the series?
It does. It does. I won't say too much.
No,
I'm
you probably can't. Yeah.
It does. There's the flashbacks back and forth, and we kind of see their life, and it all starts to make sense as we are watching this couple gravitate towards, or even navigate their grief and figure that out. So it's a really special piece, and I really think at the heart of it is a love story. It's what we're watching, this beautiful family, as we say at the beginning. We meet them then 3 years on, and they have this unfathomable loss between them, this couple, but they're still together.
Yeah, because often, unfortunately, in when tragedies strike, often of that nature, it does one of two things to a couple. It can tear them apart, or it can actually bring them very close. And it would seem as if Harry and Robin have navigated that into a closeness.
Yeah, I think when we get through the series, we see how they're both at very different parts of their grief. I won't give too much away, but in episode one, we do meet them back in Dublin 3 years on at Dylan's birthday party, or his birthday even. And Robin wants to celebrate that. I think it's the first year. My character wants to get a cake for him and celebrate his life. And Harry's not there just yet.
I mentioned that we keep getting flashbacks to the moment of the earthquake, and, well, I presume in later episodes to other to later moments as well, because there is a bit of a mystery at play here. This is the moment when Robin, your character, Tony, comes back. The earthquake has happened. She's working in the restaurant. She's been asked to stay late yet again, it would seem. The earthquake happens, and of course the first thing is that she runs home, and fairly quickly she realises that poor old Harry went out to do something, to do a quick message, ask the neighbour to look. It wasn't that he abandoned the child, he asked the neighbour to look after the child. And here's the moment when you, as Robin, realise that Colin Morgan as Harry wasn't actually where he was supposed to be at that moment.
Why didn't you run up to him? You could have saved him, no? Why didn't you? What do you mean you were downstairs? I don't. It's like, wait, no, don't. You went downstairs. You went downstairs, so he was on his own. Was he on his own, Harry? I'm talking to you. You went downstairs. Where was Dylan when you went downstairs? Where was he? Where was he, Harry?
You know, even listening to it there, you can, the grief that they are both experiencing, exactly. You know, and the guilt that he must be feeling. And as it wasn't an abandonment, and lots of parents have gone down the road to check something and asked the neighbour, will you keep an eye for 5 minutes for me? Not expecting that there would be an earthquake in the meantime. Showing us that loss, it struck me what close, because you did seem like a little family unit yourself, and the little, is it a little boy or a little girl that plays the young
Emily? Yes.
Yeah, Emily. It's Emily who plays the young version of the child of Dylan. Yourself, Colin, and Emily really did look like a little family unit whose uncle come in every so often in the person of Carol Logan.
Yes, yes. And actually, when we shot the scene that you just heard, it was a week after we got to shoot all our family scenes. So that loss and that, imagine, you use your imagination.
Emily had gone home.
She had gone home. So, you know, we were really experiencing, and we knew what the family was at that stage. We the privilege of being able to bond as a cast in that way and find that family. Hannah Quinn, our amazing director, really gave us space as a family to kind of discover that, and she has a real language of love about her, so we wanted to find that, and it was fun. We wanted to make it fun for Emily. That was a huge thing for us. That was an objective.
Did you meet Hannah Quinn like ages ago?
Yes.
who directed, did you work with her on something previously?
I did. I worked with Hannah back in 2012. I was 18 and I just left school and I'd gone to Vietnam to work on a film called Noble, and she was the second AD, so the second assistant director on that. And we met, and yeah, she was just amazing. We clicked straight away, and a couple of years later she rang me and said, I've always wanted to work with you again. I want to do my first short film as a director. And we went and made Smithy and Dickie. And yeah, now we have this together, which is really special.
And this is the first major TV series for you, but there's a lot of film work under your belt. Calm with Horses is one that comes to mind for me. Just remind us of that film and the role you played within it. I remember I spoke to Niamh Alger about it at the time, and I think Barry Keoghan, was he in there as well?
Yeah.
I spoke to the two of them about that at the time. That was an extraordinary film. You played the character of Niamh's friend in it.
I was Barry's sister.
I am
Niamh's friend now, posted. But in it, yeah, so Calm with Horses, which is directed by Nick Rowland, we shot, I think that must have been 2019, 2018.
Yes, a while back. And on the wild west coast of Ireland, as opposed to the sunny east coast of Morocco.
It was very
west coast
different.
Of Morocco.
Exactly. Yeah. No, yeah, we shot that in Galway, and that tells the story of the Deaver family, and Barry's characters. One brother of, I think there was five of us sisters, another sister being Hazel Doop, and then Niamh Alger's character, who is dating Cosmo Jarvis' character, he kind of is getting involved in our family, which we're not the family we want to be involved in.
Was subsequent to that then that you were with Paul Mescal and Emily Watson? Yeah.
Yes, and Ashton Franchosi and Declan Conlon as well. We were a family unit in God's Creatures, which was Anna Rose Homer and Celia Davis, our directors. That is an amazing film. I was very lucky with
so
that.
Can you explain to me then, because I ask more and nearly every actor who comes in to me about this, what is happening in Irish screen at the moment? I mean, there was a time when theatre acting was where the really exciting stuff was happening. There wasn't as much screen stuff happening. That has changed in recent decades.
Yeah. I've been asked about this, and I think I'm trepidatious to say that there's anything new in the water. I think opportunity is coming to our door now, and we can walk into the rooms with our heads held high being Irish, and there is a buzz about being an Irish creative now at the moment. But you know, we stand on the shoulders of giants. We have a wealth of talent in this country. You know, we have wordsmiths and poets and you know, and that maybe comes from our bad weather and everybody stuck inside and, you know, writing and creating. So possibly, but we're definitely having a very exciting moment.
Yeah, there's. It feels as if certainly in terms of, well, theatre's always been my first love, I guess, I'd have to admit.
Yes,
but
mine too.
In terms of Irish screen too, there's something happening, and it has been, it has not just happening in the last few years, it started a long time ago.
It has.
But it seems to be coming to fruition at this point. So we have four episodes of The Boy That Never Was I have three to come.
Yes,
have four to watch, and I can't ask you anything about the following three because I know I want to follow them to kind of get, I presume there are loads of twists and turns.
Yeah.
So we should have mentioned actually, by the way, in Morocco, Simon Callow, the character, he plays the character of Cosmo.
Yes, amazing Simon Callow. I mean, gosh, what a gift to work with that man. He is just, he's as generous on screen as he is off screen, and I mean, he's so talented. Like his books, I don't know if you've read any of his books, but Love Is Where It Falls is one of my favourites. So he's a really, really special person. And he read the script and absolutely loved it and was so excited, came on board when we got him, when we heard he was coming for our Cosmo. We were like, oh my gosh. And he gave so, so much. So yeah, we were so lucky.
Have you any idea at this point what is next?
I do.
Can you say?
I can't say, but I may say that I too love theatre. So let's see.
All right. I wonder, is it in the theatre? Is that too big a hint that you've just given us? But a great experience that clearly that you've had on the Boy That Never Was.
Yes.
I'm dying to see how it all turns out. In Dublin, I have to say, looks not as sunny as Morocco, but it looks brilliant in this version as well. The Boy That Never Was starts this Sunday on RT1. Will you watch it again at home, or why will you do it at 9:35 on Sunday evening?
I may be forced. I think the whole family will be sitting around, and if I get up and walk away, but you know, it is, it's very exciting.
Yeah, well, best of luck with it all, and with whatever piece of theatre is coming subsequent to that. Indeed is Tony O'Rourke character, plays the character of Robin. In the television series The Boy That Never Was, starting on RT1 television this coming Sunday. And as is usually the case on a Friday night, it's full of albums. But before we get stuck into albums, let me give you a quick mention to National Cinema Day, which takes place across the country tomorrow. That is Saturday, August the 31st. It's official. The summer is over, even though August is in autumn. I know that. Admission tickets in cinemas taking part in National Cinema Day will be reduced to €5 each, no matter what the seat is, no matter what the film is. More than 99% of Irish cinemas are taking part. Find one near you, and you can do that if you don't know where it is, and you can find out what's on there on cinemaday.ie. There's something. Five or go to the cinema. Sure, that's for nothing.
Anything good on?
What?
Is there anything on,
If you look on cinemaday.ie, Pat Carty. I'm not going to do your research for you. You can do that yourself. album reviews, as you may have worked out, Pat Carty is in the studio with me, as is Zara Hederman. We're going to talk about albums from Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, Laurie Anderson, Daughter and Daughter of a Drum. But before we do that, Pat Carty.
Here we go.
Coldplay.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, there's people driving to Coldplay
speak. Good for them.
Now, will you get a little bit given out about them?
I wasn't given out. And I'll tell you, I'm getting guff here because I went to Coldplay last night, as readers of the Irish Times will know. I can still go and click on that and read it still if they want. I went all prepared to put the boot in. I had the size 10 steel-toed steel cap boots on, ready to go, because I'm not a huge fan of them. But the show was fantastic. The show was, right from the off. That thing with where they give you the glowing LED bracelets is a genius move. It makes everybody a part of the show. I've seen a lot of stadium gigs. That was a really, really good one. Very convincing.
Did you do anything? Did you do any dancing last night?
Did I do any dancing? No, but what I could have done if I did feel, I was in the press box where it doesn't give you much room for dance. But if I wanted to dance, and this is for people going to it, there's two kinetic floors on the pitch of Croke Park. And if you dance on those, you're helping to power the gig.
That? Well, do you know what? We are on visuals, of course, tonight, as people will know, on rte.ie/arena. Any chance that we could get a little bit of an owl dance now?
I might throw a few shapes when you're playing the cave. Let's. Is anybody watching? Okay. Rise when I gave the word.
Now in the morning I sleep alone. I hope there were good dancers at the gig when you saw it, Pat. However, thank you for giving us that bit of fun.
You're very welcome.
And
very
I'm sure that will be up on our socials before long.
I really would rather you didn't do that. But,
going viral as we speak, I'm sure.
I didn't think of that.
No, well, I did. At any rate, you would recommend the gig.
Yeah, no, listen, it was great.
If you don't have tickets.
It was great. It really was. I mean, it's all Oasis Mania at the moment, but that was really good.
There you go. Really good. Okay, let us turn our minds to album reviews. Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, Wild God, which comes 5 years after 2019's Ghost Teen. It is the band's 18th studio album. We'll also be talking about Laurie Anderson's new album, Amelia, Chicago-born and Grammy Lifetime Award recipient, considered by many to be one of the greatest, if not the greatest, conceptual artist of her generation. Like Cave, she emerged in the 1980s, a debut album called Big Science, which kind of has links into what we're going to talk about this evening, the new album, Amelia. 22 tracks about the renowned female aviator Amelia Earhart and her tragic last flight. And then our final album this evening will be from Daughter of a Drum, debut 10-track album from this Irish artist. The album is called Pink Breath, and it is Kildare-based multidisciplinary artist Aoife McAtamney, who is the person behind Daughter of a Drum. Pat Carty, dancer extraordinaire and Coldplay fan.
Yeah, that's true.
And Zara Hederman, who sat watching all of that, are both here.
Are you okay? Stunned. Are you all right?
I'm just surprised you're not wearing yellow today, Pat, because if you're such a fan now, the
my underwear might be all yellow. You don't know.
That's a conversation I don't need any more of. Thank you. Let us go to our first album this evening, which is Wild God from Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. And here is the title track. There we go, Wild God, the title track from the new Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds album, Wild God. I think, Zara, you were coming to this album with a lot of trepidation.
I was, because even though I am a Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds fan, I think they've had some incredible albums. I wasn't a huge fan of Ghosteen, the last album from 2019, although the Warren Ellis and Nick Cave collaboration, Carnage, I thought was brilliant.
Which was, the film version, or wasn't it? Explain exactly what it was, its relationship to the album, because I remember seeing that and talking to Warren Ellis about it, and I mean, the both of us blubbered our way through the interview.
Yeah, well, I mean, they've been dab hand at collaborating with Andrew Dominic, who they've made two films with, This Much I Know To Be True and One More Time With Feeling. And both of those have kind of gone into like explorations on how they work, what informs the albums. And I love watching those films just for those insights. And I think as well, especially the last decade or so has been very, very sad in Nick Cave's life.
He's lost two children.
Horrendously sad. And I found this album, you know, Ghosteen and Skeleton Tree together really delved very deep into that grief. And this album, I guess as well, I was kind of a bit anxious about how sad it was going to be again on this one, because when Nick Cave does go there, he really goes there. Yeah. But what I found really interesting, earlier this year, he did an interview with an Australian radio program, and he said that for the most of my life, I was so in awe of my own genius. And then after the events of his two sons dying, he really got a lot of perspective on how indulgent that was. And what I loved with this album is that, like we heard on the title track there, he mentions Jubilee Street, and even the sounds of that song really reminded me of the album Push the Sky Away, of which Jubilee Street is a song in that album.
And that's from early on, isn't it?
Yeah, about 10 plus years ago now at this stage. And I loved how this album does deal with grief. It does have a lot of that kind of bawdy Nick Cave kind of humour, and there's humour in this, and I felt that this album was really encouraging conversation then with Ghosteen, Skeleton Tree, Push the Sky Away. So for me, I was hugely relieved to love this.
As his son Arthur died in 2015, and then his second death was Jethro, his other son, who died in 2022. Like, just trying to cope with a loss like that, quite extraordinary. But I got a sense on the very opening track, there's a line, he doesn't finish all the king's horses and all the king's men. But I did get a sense of him, that's one of the lyrics, but I did get a sense of him, Pat, almost putting himself back together and saying, you know, not I'm going to forget my sons, but I have to get on with things and I have to move on in some way.
Yeah. I think so. I think I said in a review that it's like a fluttering of a curtain in a dark room. It's just some light maybe is coming back in. A record like this, I think this is a near masterpiece. I think it's incredible. But it asks the biggest question of it all. You know, it asks, what's it all about? Why are you going? I mean, someone in that situation would have to ask, why? How can I continue? What's the point of doing anything? What's the point of making it? The fact that he made art out of what happened to him, or made art to reflect what happened to him, like Ghosteen and Skeleton Tree, which I think are I personally think are fantastic records, amazing records, really, that he could even make them at all. And then this one, where he finds, I think, this album is both about not acceptance and not recovery, but, you know, just dealing with what happened and carrying on, and also being able to do that because of love. I think there's an awful lot of love on this album. Maybe it's coming from his wife, maybe it's coming from his other son, you know, or whatever, or maybe he feels it from his art or just from the universe. You know, and also Nick Cave has turned around on this as someone who wrote a song, you know, Into My Arms, I Don't Believe in an Interventionist God. God turns up on this a lot, you know, and maybe it's not, you know, it's a God. He calls out for mercy. There's another line on the album where he says, you know, I'm paraphrasing here. Love doesn't cost much, but it costs everything at the same time, you know. So grief, as they say, is the bill coming across the table for love.
And there are lots of various, joy is one of the, of the song titles.
Hard to believe that he could have a song called Joy.
Conversion, Long Dark Night, but it is the final track on the album. Spiritual in name and spiritual in nature, as the water covers the sea. I tell you now, I can't listen to any more because I have to talk. Mm. I mean, that's an extraordinarily moving song. The gospel nature of the choir, the he can be whoever you want that he to be, can be, you know, some deity. It also could be referring specifically to his two boys. It's an extraordinary song from an extraordinary album. Stars and final comments from you, Zara?
Any time I listened to that, I almost felt like I was at mass. Like, it was just so... And Nick Cave is someone that people find such a spiritual connection to, and I think connection is something he really wanted with this album. And I read that he said that listening back to this album, he says that he feels that they sounded happy making it. And I think that's a really beautiful thing. And I loved this. I loved the sonics. I loved how it married all kind of elements of Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. So it was a 4.5 for me.
Four and a half. What are you saying, Pat?
Well, I can quickly say that in all my travels and my reading and long life and everything, I've only found two types of magic in the world. One of them is love, which is inexplicable. And the other one is the effect of music. And this is an album that's, you know, full of the effect of love, the recovery of love, the bringing back from the brink that only love can give you. And it's reflected in this magical art that affected me very, very deeply. And who can explain how music works? I don't know. I think it's near masterpiece. I would give it 4.978 out of 5. You know, as close to 5 as I've ever gotten this show, I think.
All right. So I presume you're giving the other 0.25 to Coldplay, yeah?
0.25 out of 1,000 for their last record.
All right. Well, seriously, Wild God, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, I think it's clear that you both really, really enjoyed it and well worth listening to. Back with our second two albums shortly. All right, we're still here and we have gathered ourselves after the emotion of Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds and their album Wild God. Let's move on to Laurie Anderson and Amelia, the queen of concepts, I think we could refer to Laurie Anderson as. I kind of, if I hear the word concept album, it's, oh no, here we go again. Not in this case.
It depends on the concept. He's gone. He's off. Coldplay. He's back at Coldplay. No, like a concept like this, based on Amelia Earhart's last voyage in 1937, based on biographies, telegrams, diaries. Sign me up. Laurie Anderson doing it.
Yeah.
A Czech Philharmonic 19 string quartet or string ensemble.
String orchestra. I'm there. There was an attempt to be the first woman to circumnavigate the globe between May the 20th and then the misfortune came on July the 2nd, 1937. But Pat Carty, you're not a
No, that's not true. I thought this was an interesting concept, as you mentioned the word concept, which can sometimes be a bit of a swear word in terms of music. I thought it was an interesting idea. I listened to it the first time and I thought, oh yeah, that's interesting. But to me, it was like a podcast or an audiobook. You know, if I listen to an episode of The Rest Is History, I don't put it on again at the end of it. It doesn't really work for me as an album. You know what I mean? There's nothing you'd be whistling going down the garden path on this. In fact, absolutely nothing. And it's an interesting and it's well done. And, you know, it's great the way they go through the episodes and get into the mindset of the woman and her navigator who you crashed. And the thing about the letter that they have in the airplane that she can't even read, because if she crashes in foreign lands, they can read and say, why did this woman fall out of this guy? There's you know, it's interesting, but as a record, I mean, who would buy this and go, yeah, I listened to that last night, I want to put it on again this morning, you know, to get you going for the day, to make you feel any kind of joy. It's easier to admire than to love. How about
okay
that?
We're into love again, but yeah. Admiration
love
is all
around.
Admiration is all we're getting on this one. Let's have a listen to a track, or it's not even right to call them tracks. Pat may have a point.
Chapters.
There. Let's listen to a bit of the album called India and On Down to Australia.
June 18th. Grey skies.
There we go. India and On Down to Australia. And you can kind of, you don't really get a sense of it in that, Sarah. That's the voice of Laurie Anderson from this concept album, Amelia. Anoni is in there as well. The voice isn't kind of buried in the background, but that does, Anoni's voice adds a lot to this album.
Yeah, I think she brings a really beautiful quality and dynamic to it, because as we heard there, like obviously Laurie Anderson is using like the kind of vocoder effect which she's used throughout her career, and I think she does it really effectively. A lot of the time I can find it a bit grating, but in terms of what we're talking about here, like Laurie Anderson was fascinated by Amelia Earhart for like technology as a woman who was so forward-thinking and so passionate about it. That song, Indian On Down to Australia, is one of the more vast moments. I think it might also be one of the longer moments.
Yeah, it's about like 3 minutes. Whereas most of the other little sections, 22 sections are about a minute long.
Yeah, and like kind of Pat said earlier, for me it was like a radio play almost. And we talked during that song how personally I would love to see this in the National Concert Hall with some accompanying visuals, because I think Laurie Anderson, again, conceptual artist, this would be amazing. That's and fair. These songs came about 25 years ago when she was commissioned to write a piece of music based on flight, and it was the conductor Dennis Russell Davies who came to her with Amelia Earhart's story, and she was really fascinated by it, but she wasn't happy with that initial iteration of it, and he has actually come back for this, and he's worked with her again and worked with together on how to strip back elements, how to make kind of the strings do a lot of the work here. And what I found really interesting, there's a recurring drone motif in the album that's to symbolise like the plane, obviously, and I was reading about where that drone came from, and it's actually a guitar drone created by her late husband Lou Reed's guitar and amps for when he was doing Metal Machine music, and she's mixed her own like processed viola with that. There's other recordings, so it's really interesting. And there's a lot going on.
I think I would agree with you that idea of an actual concert version or a performed version would be much more accessible. What would you say stars wise?
I loved this. I loved sitting down with this, and Pat, I'll be listening to it again in the morning.
Yeah,
so it was
enough.
a four from me.
You do need to listen to it right through. You can't really dip in and out. What are you saying, Pat?
Sorry, just when you say about the show, I think that's a great idea. But just, you mentioned Big Science earlier on. I just want to quickly say this. Big Science, the album with O Superman on it, was a distillation of an 8-hour live production. called United States Live. And then she was working on a 3-hour epilogue to that. So you're going to go down to the National Stadium for 11 hours. Anyway.
No, going to go to the concert hall.
Concert hall, yeah. Should I say. Not the National Stadium. What did I think of this? I thought this was interesting. Again, I don't think I'd be listening to it again.
But would you go to the show?
Would I go to the show? Yeah, that might be interesting, yes. Right, I'll give you that. I'll give this a 2.5.
Two and a half.
It is an interesting concept.
For the show that you haven't seen yet?
For the show that might never be, yeah.
All right, so 2.5 is what you're saying, Anna. 4 from Zara. Let's move on swiftly to The Daughter of a Drum. And this is, her name has gone straight out of my head, Aoife McAtamney. Let's listen to a song called Song A. I just wanted to give a sense of that, the opening of that song. It's such a brave lyric, it's such a brave song to sing in the way that she sings it there. Yeah. Maybe explain to us who Aoife McAtamney is, who is Daughter of a Drum.
Yeah, she's a Kildare-based multidisciplinary artist who tends to incorporate a lot of dance and film into her music. This is her debut, and it is going to be accompanied by a film called Polly Pink, which is going to explore themes of sexuality, fertility and home. And I think we get a very good indication of that through that song, Song A. That, for me, was always one of the most arresting moments on the album. You noted her voice there, Sean, while we were listening. And what I loved about her voice as well is the pacing on that song. She allows us into that song. She details, you know, the warm and sunny day. She talks about not being able to hold her parents' hands. And this album was written during, it was written over a couple of years, and it was marked by like the repeal movement and the marriage equality referendum as well. And something I saw that McTaname had said about her music is she described it as cathartic and sensual because it invites audiences to get into their feelings and the mystery of life. Urgent because it archives experience I find value in sharing.
Yeah, stars from you on this one, Zara.
3.5. I thought this was really excellent.
We were commenting on her voice, Pat, and the bravery of that song. Yeah, and there's a whole range of qualities in her voice across the album, if you can be brief on it.
I will, yeah. I mean, there's two songs that really stood to me, as well as that. I think that's a very powerful song, obviously. Heal Me and Hippie.
Yeah.
Just great melodies, great arrangements, the way the strings, and great vocal arrangements, the way she uses her voice.
And very maybe, versatile and different
maybe two or three
and voices.
Different tracks at the same time, you know, of voices. I knew nothing about this person before I heard this, and I'm very, very impressed with this. I would give this 3.5 out of 5. Very promising and very, very powerful, I think.
Yeah, so a very good starting point for a debut album, and you both want to hear more. That's Aoife McAtamney, or Daughter of a Drum, and her album Pink Breath. We were also talking about Laurie Anderson's Amelia and Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds' Wild God. And that is our lot for this Friday evening. Mark McGrath was on sound tonight. Barbara Rose Sanwell was the researcher. Ollie Hamilton was the broadcast coordinator. And tonight's programme produced by Reg Luby. Back with you at our usual 7 o'clock time from next Monday, which is the 2nd of September. We're really and truly into the autumn now. Talk to you then. Have a great weekend. John Creedon is on the way.